turn our attention now to our teaching session this evening on vocation. Let me just kind of remind you a bit of where we come from, just remind us where we are and situate this. Vocation comes from the Latin meaning to call. I looked up this evening in the Webster dictionary to see how Webster defines calling, and the English calling is used really in two respects. It's used with respect to a religious calling, someone who is going into like the priesthood or the monastery or maybe into the ministry as a pastor or something. And then secondly, it's used as an occupation that is a paid occupation. Now, one of the things that I've been laboring on, I'm going to hit it again tonight, is that we do not understand vocation in that reductionistic way. It's not only for someone who's in full-time ministry. It's not only for someone who has a 9-to-5 and a paycheck. But really, your life is filled with various vocations, various callings. That was at the heart of the Reformation itself. A recovery of God's care and concern, his tender concern for the ordinary Christian. That it wasn't just God's concern for the monk or the nun, but God's concern for the everyday mom and dad, the everyday farmer, the everyday brewer, and so forth. That God really draws near to all of us through vocation. Vocation is, yes, something that we are called to do from God. So there's a command, there's a summons that calls us outside of ourselves to engage with the world around us, to love our neighbors, to love God in corporate worship and inside all of our lives and lives of piety, in the sphere of our families, which we're going to talk about tonight. And yes, in various kinds of labors that we undertake, even if those labors are not directly related to a neighbor, going out and tending your garden, even if it's a flower, you're not going to eat that flower. That's still something valuable to God. God made things beautiful in the Garden of Eden. So vocations should be understood in a very diverse way. Lawful things that better the world. Lawful things that bless the world and bless your neighbor. Okay? So tonight, I cannot miss this too. It is not only what you're called to do, blessing creation and blessing neighbor, but it is also Luther's phrase here, so helpful. Vocations are a mask of God, whereby God comes to you to bless you through the vocations of other people. So as God upholds the non-Christian police officer, the non-Christian doctor or dentist, or the person who just says hi to and smiles at you, that is not just that person doing that, but God, by his common grace, is coming to you as if in a mask. You don't see God, but he's there blessing you through the vocations of others. So to see vocation this diverse way, this rich way, helps us to recognize God in the ordinary, to see this world as charged with the very presence of God, that God is with us. God is here. God is here with in your neighbor. God is here summoning you outside of yourself. That God is truly intimate to you, not just when we gather for Lord's Day worship, although he's certainly there in a special way in word and sacrament to bring forth Christ and salvation in the body and blood of Christ. But nevertheless, throughout all of your life, creation is charged with the presence of a holy God who comes to you to call you, who comes to you to bless you. Okay. So tonight, we're going to think about family. We're going to be thinking about, in my next teaching session, is going to be on the topic of the polis, or the city. I'm using that Greek word for a reason, which I'll explain later. But the polis, the city, the community, talk about in the future. But tonight, the building block of community, the family. Authority structures, ever since the Garden of Eden, have been under attack. This is certainly true today. Authority structures under attack. And one of those spheres of authority is the sphere of family. It is undermined. This can be seen very clearly in the political realm. The progressive left that embraces abortion, that undermines biblical marriage, that seeks to micromanage the way that parents raise their children and to prohibit certain things like corporal punishment. These are ways that the authority of the family is being undermined and attacked. It's also coming from the right, perhaps not to the exact same extent. But the right, after all, has joined the left by advocating for easy divorce and by modeling in some of our political leaders a sort of acceptance of marital infidelity. All of these things undermine the sphere of family, the authority of family, the importance of family. This is the building block of mankind. Tonight we're going to think about this sphere of authority and vocation, the sphere of the vocation of family. Again, loving our neighbor begins as we love our closest neighbors, our family. Let me also say up front here that this topic does not at all diminish the call to singleness that all of us have for at least some of our lifetime. The single person still belongs to a family. Thus, the single person still has vocation or vocations within their family. Even Jesus and Paul had a calling toward family, though they remained single. So let's begin here. There are various callings in this realm of family, various callings. This sphere of family is found in creation itself. God appointed family to spread his image across the face of the earth. He blessed man by creating woman, by establishing an institution called marriage, and by calling husband and wife to procreate. The significance of this institution for world history cannot possibly be understated. Civil government did not institute the family. That's massive. Civil government did not appoint the family. That means it cannot rule over the family. God appointed the family and gave the family certain responsibilities, certain authority within the family. In that pre-fall state before the first sin, we learn that marriage is an institution that many are called to enter. It's a good vocation, one that should never be despised or denigrated. It was given authority, man, male, was given authority in the marriage relationship. It was his calling. He was also called in that position of authority to devote his life to the service of his wife. She was a glorious gift from God that evoked poetry from his lips. He was not only placed in a position of authority, but one to serve and to love and to lay down his life for her, even before the fall. So too, we learn that parenthood is a good vocation as we look before the fall. A blessed thing to procreate, being fruitful and multiplying, to spread the image of God, we also find in creation there is also a vocation for the child. This vocation is by implication. The husband and wife would be called to nurture and to discipline their children. And they would be called, the children would be called to honor their father and their mother. Could singleness have taken place in a pre-fall state? Well, yeah, obviously. Because kids aren't being married from the womb. There had to be some form of singleness. And I also think that we should avoid the idea, the suggestion, that singleness is an effect of the fall. I think that has absolutely no biblical grounding. We can affirm the goodness of marriage without denigrating the calling of singleness, which again, every one of us has for at least some part of our lives. Now, of course, singleness may result now as an effect of the fall. Some people are single because of sin. For example, adultery and divorce. Some people are now single because of death, the death of a spouse. So, we should recognize that some singleness does result from the fall, but singleness, I do not believe at all, should be seen as entirely a result of the fall. So, various parts of various kinds of callings in family and from creation: son, daughter, father, mother, husband, wife, callings to be an aunt or an uncle, callings to be a niece or nephew, callings to be a grandparent or great-grandparent or grandchild or great-grandchild, and so forth. Many callings appointed by God in creation. I think we could proceed by summarizing the callings upon family and summarize it by putting into three categories. There can be those who are called to love through nurture. There are those who are called to love through honor. And those who are called to love through encouragement. Here's what I mean. Those that are in a position of authority in family, those are called to love through nurture, to sacrifice oneself for the good and upbuilding of someone else. That is what a parent is called to do, to love through self-sacrificial nurture and care. I would say as well, that's what the husband is called to do, to love his wife through self-sacrificial nurture. Not as a parent toward a child, obviously, but rather through self-sacrifice and care for the other. You can even put, I think, older siblings and older cousins and grandparents in this category of love through nurture. Now, they don't love through nurture in the same way that a parent loves a child. But clearly, grandparents are called to love through nurture, not merely to spoil their grandchildren, which I think is a common way that we view being a grandparent today. I don't have my eyes on any grandparents here, don't worry. But all of us, as we think about these positions of, you know, authority, it's not a domineering thing. It's a loving, nurturing thing, a self-sacrificial thing that we are called to do inside the family. Secondly, that phrase I used, loving through honor. As we are those who are under authority, as a child toward parents or a grandchild toward grandparents or a nephew or niece toward an aunt or uncle, we show the proper honor toward them, to esteem them. The command to honor your father and mother does not end with your father and your mother. It's speaking about all those in authority over us, especially those inside our family relationships. Now again, we don't show the same kind of honor to an aunt as we show our mom or to our grandmother. These are different callings you have, whereby you show different kinds of honor and authority that fits with that relationship. I would say that even those of us who may not have, you know, living grandparents or maybe living parents, we can even still now show honor to them by the way we speak about them or think about them or situate ourselves within that family lineage, showing honor to where we come from. So loving through nurture, loving through showing honor, and also loving through encouragement. I use that because there's also those kinds of relationships and callings in the family where we relate to others as peers. A day comes when the older brother, and I'm sad to say this because I am an older brother, where you become an adult with your younger brother and you no longer relate as an authority over him. That's sad for me. But now, rather than relating as one who should love through nurture, I should now relate as one who loves through encouragement toward a peer. I think we can see that also in other kinds of relationships we might have within families. They change as you get older. They change as you become adults. That maybe the way you relate to an aunt or an uncle, while still showing honor, you might begin to relate more as a peer as you become older and seasoned in your life. So again, recognizing these different relationships and ascertaining how it is that God calls us outside of ourselves to show love to those who are closest to us, our closest neighbors. Diverse ways of showing love because we have diverse callings. Of course, these things are frustrated now by the fall. Sin disrupts the web of family relationships. Sin is antithetical to love, whether sacrificial nurture or the showing of honor or to encouraging one another. With sin, as you think about Genesis chapters 3 and 4 and so forth, you see estrangements in the family right away between Adam and woman as they discover they were both naked and they were ashamed and they covered themselves, a sign of estrangement in the Old Testament. Or as that horrific event occurs between brothers, Cain and Abel, or then the estrangement between Adam and Eve with Cain, who is sent out to become a vagabond. Family was broken. Family became disrupted. That web ripped apart by sin. We see this in broken marriages and in broken families. We see this in child abandonment and divorce. We see this as brothers are estranged from one another, as parents and children are estranged. This ought to lead us to mourn the sin of mankind, and indeed to humble ourselves, for we are part of sinful mankind, although we might not be responsible for such estrangement. In Matthew 10, Jesus warns the Christian further on this, that sin for the Christian is all the more likely to estrange you from your family. Jesus said, "I have not come to bring peace, but a sword," in Matthew 10. "For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So sin is especially damaging to the family relations that can oftentimes surround Christians. We become estranged on account of Christ and the gospel. This is not even to mention how death from the fall disrupts families for obvious reasons. family is not now what it was supposed to be. Truly, enmity between husband and wife, between children, between siblings, there is pain in childbearing. Let's think practically now as we close. I'm going to close by first encouraging you to recognize your place and your callings within your family. You must first begin there. Then ask yourself, what does it mean to love your family members from your place inside your family? Now, for some more distant relations, like that third cousin you never see, to love that third cousin might just mean showing up to the family reunion every 5 years, saying hi, giving a hug, how are you doing? That is appropriate for a distant relationship. But what does it mean in the context of your life with those whom the Lord has entrusted to you? Remember, we honor those who the Lord has placed above us as authority. We nurture those who are younger than us to raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord and to raise them as good human beings. We encourage those who are around us, whom we consider to be peers. Love your neighbor, especially those closest to you. But I also encourage you to think tonight, what family relationships need to be mended? We should be in the business of trying to do this, to seek reconciliation. Perhaps healing in your family is needed. Perhaps it's needed in all of our families, because all families are disrupted by sin to some degree. Or maybe you are actually called to bring healing to some people who are outside of your family and to bring them into your family. Adoption of an orphan, perhaps. Or to care for a widow, to show hospitality to those who may not have much of any earthly family left. Since the fall, family has to take on a whole new meaning. Family can oftentimes be those who are not actually biologically related to you, just as Gentiles have been welcomed into the house of Israel. We too are called to show welcome to others. As we think about this calling toward family, I also encourage you that your attempts to love through nurture, through honor, through encouragement, that they are glorifying to God, even if your attempts go unrecognized. This can be a hard thing in families. You seek to love someone who's hard to love. You seek to bring reconciliation, but it doesn't work. Rest assured that the Lord has called you to that, so the Lord bestows value upon that. Value is not bestowed based upon the success of your efforts. Value is there because the Lord has called you. Remember Luther's statement about the parent changing a diaper. That menial task is appointed by God. Therefore, the dirty diaper should be seen as if encrusted with the most precious jewels. God gives it value. We don't. So too, this should help us to see the important place of the church in our lives. The church is not only a city or polis, as we'll get to soon, is also the family of God, the household of God. Given the effects of the fall, we need the family of the church. The notion of church as family must not be the subject of mere lip service. The church as family is not some spiritual thing that lacks concrete manifestation. No, it's a real thing that comes into real expression in space and time. Listen to Mark chapter 10, a paraphrase this from Jesus. Everyone who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children for the sake of Christ and the gospel, everyone will receive a hundredfold in this life, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions. What is it referring to there? The church. 100 times as much now. The church must be family. The church is called to uphold one another when we are alienated from our parents and siblings. The church is there as eternal family. Indeed, as we become part of the church, we are adopted into the family of God. God becomes our father. The Son becomes our elder brother. The church is your mother, through whom the Spirit works, granting heavenly birth and granting heavenly food and heavenly drink to nourish you as if from her breast. The household of faith is a massive family, a vast multitude of adopted sons and daughters that will populate the heavenly house. After all, why has Christ gone away? In part, to prepare rooms for us all. Truly, we are called toward family. We have many vocations toward our biological family, and God blesses us through family, but not just through our earthly family, also through our heavenly family. Amen.